Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Fan. And Sports Radio 66. W-F-A-N. New York.
First step to the NBA offseason is the NBA draft, a day that Knicks fans now look forward to because they actually own their own draft picks. It's a day that's depressing for Brooklyn Nets fans because we have to watch somebody else use our freaking picks to take potential franchise players. That's the NBA draft. And we put a little, what did you say again, Loogie? Not a bow tie, like a little blue bow on the NBA draft as we talk to a guy you can read at thesportingnews.com, amongst a million other places, and that's Sam Vecenie. Sam, Evan Roberts, how are you?
Evan, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's going very well. Now, I got to get on you about something before we talk NBA draft. How do you manage to grade draft picks? Like, NFL guys do this all the time, too. Like, they haven't played yet. How do you know? Like, how do we know? Because here's what's going to happen. Like, let me find like a bad grade you gave somebody, okay? Like, so you gave the Bulls a bad grade, right? Wasn't it them?
Yep.
Yeah, you gave him a C- for Justin Patton, right? Oh, except that pick was traded to Portland. When that guy becomes all world, like, everybody's going to look back on it and say, can you believe this Vecenie? What the hell was he thinking?
Hey, you know, that happened with me last year with Thon Maker. I thought that that was an awful draft pick by the Milwaukee Bucks. And here he is playing minutes in the NBA playoffs right this year already. So, no, I mean, it's definitely an exact science, don't get me wrong. But it feels like I am probably relatively capable of coming close on most of this stuff. I've been scouting these guys all year, and you kind of, watch the NBA all year. You see these guys up close. You see them live when you go cover games. You see all of the NBA prospects live when you go cover games. You get a really good feel of what rosters need, of what NBA executives should be looking for in players, given the fact that the modern NBA is going toward pace and space. Look, I'm not going to tell you I'm perfect. I am far from it. But, I understand why people ask me to do it, and I understand that there's demand for it. But it's a tricky process, to be sure.
Let me ask you about one thing I've been thinking about over the last couple of days with the number one overall pick, Markelle Fultz. And I understand that it may not mean anything, but I'm curious your opinion because you watch a lot of these guys, you watch the tape and all that. And to be honest with you, here's my take on college basketball. When the tournament comes around, I watch a lot of games. I'm not sitting there watching it in December and January, so I didn't see a lot of Markelle Fultz. But does it concern you when you are the number one player in the draft, second straight year this has happened, and your team in college wasn't that good? We saw it with Ben Simmons. Now they're teammates, by the way, in Philadelphia. Is that at all a warning sign when you are supposed to be a potential franchise player, yet in college your team stinks or is mediocre at best?
Yeah, I do think that you have to find the reasoning for why a player was losing games, right? With Fultz, ultimately, I do think there is an explanation. He was playing on the fourth or fifth youngest team in all of college basketball last season. His teammates were awful. They shot, I believe, 28% from three in Pac-12 play, if you take away his attempts. So there was just no talent on that roster last year outside of Markelle Fultz. Washington was the first team to recruit him, and he stayed loyal to them. He was a winner at DeMatha Catholic in Washington, D.C. He was a winner with Team USA in the FIBA Worlds, I believe, U19 event. He's not someone where I'm worried about that, but whenever that becomes the situation, you do at least have to investigate and figure out what the issue is and why a player is not winning.
Do you think, and I think the Celtics are going to be judged on this, even though they were able to bring in extra assets, but they had a chance to draft Markelle Fultz. They had a chance to bring him in here, and obviously they trade back, they draft Jason Tatum. How much, if at all, is there, I guess, a letdown, if you will, from the talent and potential of Fultz to the talent and potential of Jason Tatum?
So in terms of upside, I don't think they're markedly different. Where, for me, it comes into play is Markelle Fultz's game is just so incredibly translatable to the NBA. He is a screen-and-roll point guard in a screen-and-roll-dominated NBA. He can score from all three levels. He's a really, really good passer. It's really difficult to see how he doesn't become a top, like, 50 player in the NBA, right? With Tatum, I think there's a lot bigger of a downside there. If you told me that, you know, Jason Tatum ends up being a similar caliber player of Markelle Fultz, if they both hit exactly what they can hit, I wouldn't be surprised by any stretch. I just think there's more risk in a Jason Tatum pick because he's 6'8". He can shoot a little bit, but he still is not quite an elite level shooter yet for a guy who's going to be judged upon his scoring ability. He can get separation. He can create shots. The key is ultimately he needs to become a knockdown three-point shooter. He needs to become a knockdown mid-range shooter. He's good. He's just not great yet.
You know, watching De'Aaron Fox in the tournament, this goes back to the point I made earlier that, look, when you watch a lot of tournament, you're not watching a lot of games in December, January, and February. You're certainly missing out on a lot. But during the tournament, De'Aaron Fox looked ridiculous. The speed that he has, it of course reminds you of John Wall. And his defense was awesome. He outplayed Lonzo Ball in that game. They went head-to-head. Your take on him and where he fell to five, like, do you think he's better than that? Do you think he should have gone higher than that? And overall, your thoughts on De'Aaron Fox?
No, you know, I think five was about right for him. I had him at seven on my board. I think that anywhere from, you know, basically five to nine or so is fine for De'Aaron Fox. You're right. He is a crazy competitor. He gets after it defensively. He is relentless in terms of attacking the basket. His issue is the jump shot and his overall physical frame, right? He showed up to the combine at 169 pounds. It's going to be really difficult to take the punishment of big seven-footers who weigh 250 pounds on a night-in, night-out basis for an 82-game season in the NBA. Also, his jump shot, he shot 26% from three this year in a continually evolving NBA where spacing continues to be so incredibly valuable. He needs to become a better shooter. The guy that I kind of compare him to in terms of overall game is Mike Conley out of the Memphis Grizzlies.
Sure.
He, you know, is a really quick player, struggled with his jump shot coming out of Ohio State, wasn't necessarily an elite level distributor coming out of Ohio State either, was good like De'Aaron is, not quite elite level. I can see where the John Wall comparisons come in, but John Wall was a physical freak, right? Like John Wall was 6'3", 210 pounds coming into the NBA and was just like massive. And he was also the fastest player in the really in the NBA at this stage too. So the comparisons, I definitely see them coming for sure, but it's going to be fun. And I think he went to a great spot in Sacramento next to Buddy Hield and next to all of their big guys.
Yeah, they have a chance to be good. They had a pretty good draft. We talk, or what appears to be a very good draft. I don't want to contradict myself because God knows what the hell it's going to be. We're talking to Sam Vecenie of Sporting News. Now, do us all a favor, okay, because I figured this out. And I don't like the Knicks, so I like taking off Knicks fans, but try not to use the phrase, he fits the triangle in this answer, okay? Now, good luck with that. Good luck with that. Frank the French Telekina, without saying he fits the triangle, your thoughts on that selection at eight?
Okay, so I would have personally taken Malik Monk. It's really difficult for me to see a circumstance where Malik Monk is just not a better basketball player than Nil Akina. Having said that, Nil Akina is 6'5" with a 7-foot wingspan. He's a really, really good defensive basketball player already. You know, still not physically developed yet, but does seem to have the frame that is going to continue to fill out over the course of his career. He's going to hopefully gain explosiveness because that's the key right now. For me, he's not quite a point guard yet. He's more of a, you know, a combo guard that is going to be able to play secondary, you know, ball screen action as opposed to being a primary initiator for an offense, and it's because I don't think he's going to be able to consistently get penetration at his current level of athleticism. Now, if his frame fills out, like the best example of this in recent years is Giannis Antetokounmpo, right? Mm. Giannis, when he came into the NBA, wasn't really like a crazy, crazy athlete. He was a good athlete, but wasn't like what he is now, right? As he continued to mature physically, he added explosiveness. I think that that's going to be a key with Nil Akina. He needs to continue to add explosiveness and become, you know, hopefully, I would imagine, the Knicks point guard of the future in, you know, in a couple years where I would imagine they're probably not running the triangle.
There you go. Good job out of you. Now, why did Malik Monk fall? Is there concern about his size?
Yeah, it's size. It's you know, the fact that he doesn't really add a crazy amount of utility outside of his ability to shoot the basketball and score. You know, he's not a great distributor at 6'3", so he's not really going to be a point guard. Not a great defender either. Really good athlete, but doesn't really attack the rim all that well in the half-court settings. He's good at getting to the rim in transition, but, you know, not necessarily great whenever the offense is kind of condensed down into the offensive zone. So I can understand what the concerns are with Malik Monk, but, man, that dude can just get buckets. Yeah. I love guys that can get buckets, and Malik Monk is just unbelievable at recognizing off-ball screens and flaring out to the three-point line and finding a way to create separation from the defense. So, yeah, that's a guy that I had at number 8 on my board, and that is a steal for Charlotte, in my opinion, to get him at 11.
Now, speaking of steal, and be honest with me if it's not a steal, though if you said it's a steal, it would make me smile a little bit, and that's the Brooklyn Nets at 22, who should have been picking number 1 overall, we know. They should have been picking 1 and 22, because that's the pick they acquired from the Washington Wizards for absorbing a bad contract and trading Bojan Bogdanovic. But whatever. Jared Allen. Is that a steal for the Nets at 22? Because the front office is talking as if it was a steal at 22.
In terms of upside, yes. The key with Jared Allen has always been how committed is he to reaching his ceiling within basketball. You know, he's a guy that has interests off the floor, not necessarily a guy that plays with a crazy amount of fire on the basketball floor, right? But he has all of the skill in the world, and if Kenny Atkinson and that coaching staff, which is widely regarded around the NBA to be one of the best developmental coaching staffs in the league, if that coaching staff can get through to him, he has all of the physical tools you need to be a starting center in the NBA. He's 7'5" wingspan, 7 foot tall, you know, has really good touch around the basket, has great hands, he catches everything that comes into his mitts, good rebounder, can potentially block shots. You know, he averaged 16 and 10 in Big 12 play last season as a freshman, 18-year-old, in what was the second-best league in all of college basketball. And he did it without having a true point guard because Andrew Jones, Kerwin Roach, guys like that really were just not effective last year in any way. That's why Texas finished, you know, second to last in the Big 12. But ultimately, it's all going to be about Jarrett Allen committing to basketball and that coaching staff getting the best out of him. If he was a starting center, I would not be shocked by any stretch. And, you know, I like the pick. I like the idea of them because they don't have that number one pick going for high ceiling guys. I like the idea of them taking a shot on a Jarrett Allen. Yeah. I like the idea of them taking a shot on a D'Angelo Russell. They had one of my favorite drafts really throughout the entire course of the week whenever you take into account they also dealt number 27 for Russell.
There you go. Do you already know who you have projected to go number 1 and 2 overall in next year's NBA draft?
I do, actually. Right now I have Michael Porter, who is a kid out of Missouri, moved to Washington State this year because he's committed to Washington originally under Lorenzo Romar because his dad was the best man in Lorenzo Romar's wedding. Hmm. Ultimately, I believe he's actually Michael Porter Jr.'s godfather as well. Ultimately, what ended up happening, though, was, you know, because Markelle Fultz was there and Washington won 9 games last year, Lorenzo Romar got fired. So he is now headed to Missouri, 6'10", just elite-level scorer, can get buckets at all three levels, can shoot the ball from three. He was right around a 40% three-point shooter this year from distance. You know, has a floater game, has a mid-range game, can finish above the rim. Just a high, high-level scorer that's taken a leap over the course of the last year. Number 2 on my board, I have DeAndre Ayton, who, if you were trying to create a basketball player in a lab, you would create DeAndre Ayton. He is 7 foot tall with a 7'5" wingspan, a frame that, you know, has been 240, 250 pounds from the time that he was 16 years old. You know, he can shoot it from distance. He can block shots. He can finish above the rim. Really good athlete laterally and vertically. The problem is it always has been, what kind of effort are you going to get on a night-in, night-out basis from him? Hopefully Sean Miller at Arizona can kind of coax that effort out of him. He's one of the best at doing it.
Awesome. Two guys that my team won't draft because the pick is owned by Boston. So that's always always makes me feel great. Sam, I appreciate it. Great information. Thank you, sir.
Yep, anytime.
Sam Vecenie, Sporting News, put in a little wrap, a little tie, a little bike. I can't get that stupid phrase right. Whatever the heck it is. Wrapping up the NBA draft, if you will.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.